just like with any other wine, after we've kind of looked at it, we want to also put our noses in and appreciate what's going on the bouquet or what kind of aromas we can find.
Mmm.
Yeah, I think this one is, you know, it has a lot to say. It's got a lot of character. Sometimes you put your nose in a glass of wine and, you know, if no descriptors rush to your mind, you know, maybe it wasn't an example of really great winemaking or really great fruit. And this one for me has all those sort of honeyed kind of floral tones. Mm. And they usually say that the way Chenin Blanc displays itself and makes itself heard and noticed is through the set of fruits called orchard fruits. So Chenin Blanc will usually show kind of classic character of apples or pears or any of those kind of orchard tree fruits.
Hmm.
And I think...
Shall we try?
Yeah, let's taste it already.
Oh, that is lovely.
Mm. Mm. You want to kind of suck in a little bit of air so that you can circulate the wine in your mouth and get a little oxygen to it before you swallow it. And, I'm a huge fan of this wine. 2001 vintage, so it's a mature bottling.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you know what's even really interesting for me is listening to you, kind of getting that education of what to expect, what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes a big difference when you think about that, when you're swallowing.
Yeah, the flavors that you get even after you've swallowed the wine, that can give you a lot of clues as to what's going on, the grapes that they use, the quality of the wine.
Mm.
We always talk about something called the finish of the wine. So I always ask all of our students in our modern wine class that we have once a week, you know, after you've swallowed, how is the finish? Is it short, medium, or long? Is it persistent, or does it just kind of disappear? And I think with this wine, we've both had a sip already, and we're still kind of pondering what we smelled and what we tasted. And I still have a little bit of kind of honey on my palate, a little bit of fruit on my palate, a little bit of that sort of toasty, brioche-y character that you get from the yeast on my palate as well.
Somebody with your experience with all these different wines, I'm curious, do you have a favorite?
Oh, my gosh. That changes about every
millisecond. Well, I mean, if you go out
somewhere. My desert island wine?
Well, yeah, like if you're going out somewhere, not here, you're not working, what do you order?
I have to say sparkling wine is definitely one of my absolute favorites. You know, I think just like people love to have a beer at the end of a very long day at work, for me, that's sort of what peps me up and refreshes me. Another style that I really like that's not as popular as I think it should be is Riesling with a little bit of sweetness. I love Riesling Spätlese from Germany and Riesling Schmarrgold from the Wachau region in Austria.
Wow.
I really like those styles too because they have the really great acidity, but they also have a little richness and unctuousness, which comes from being harvested a little later and having a little sugar.
From a sparkling, do you naturally migrate to like a Chardonnay or a white? Or like
where do you
normally migrate after
sparkling?
Well, you
know, in the sort of spectrum of styles of white wine and flavors of white wine, it's, I think, best to stay with kind of the lighter styles. You might want to start with something that is un-oaked, something that is a little brighter and higher acidity. So I'm talking, you know, wines made from Sauvignon Blanc or made from Riesling or made from Pinot Grigio. Because typically as you move into the richer styles, that's when you're going to experience higher alcohols. Like most Chardonnays are going to be a little riper, or Viogniers or Roussan, like Châteauneuf-du-Pape Blanc from the Southern Rhone Valley. A lot of those grape varietals will be aged in oak barrels because they can handle it. They're also harvested a little later because they can handle it. And those wines will just be kind of richer and more palate coating than the Sauvignon Blancs and Pinot Gris and things like that. So the other one I brought for us to try is a rosé that comes from South Australia, from the Barossa Valley, which is one of the great growing areas for Australia. This is made from a grape varietal called Alicante Boucher, which you don't usually see bottled by itself. It's typically a blending grape. It's from Marquis Phillips, and it was bottled just for us, so you'll only find this here at the restaurant at the Modern. And it's also kind of neat because it's got this label that depicts... a take on an Andy Warhol painting. So
oh, my goodness.
That's why it kind of fits here at the Museum of Modern Art.
I love Australian wines. I find myself drinking a lot of Australian wines.
They do a really great job there. So I'm going to open this.
Here.
I love that sound.
Yeah.
I love the sound of a screw top opening. I think it's just great.
Now, I want to ask you, because I think that maybe this has been a misconception of mine, but... You know, a lot of people, I think, sometimes don't take rosés seriously. Is that true?
I think it's very true. I mean, if you think about here in the States, Behringer White Zinfandel is the number one selling wine. You know, as great as that wine has been for the conversion of drinkers right. to wine, I also think that it's too bad that it's made people think that that's what all rosé wine tastes
exactly.
like.
Exactly.
So that's definitely a wine that has a little bit of what they call RS, residual sugar, and you can definitely feel it on the palate because it is sweet. There are a lot of great wines that are rosé that have zero residual sugar. They're dry styles. They're made from serious grapes. There's rosés made from Pinot Noir and Cabernet Sauvignon and Grenache that definitely have a place in your wine cellar and on your table. What I think is so great about them is that it's sort of the perfect hybrid between white and red. You have the nice brightness and the cool chill of a glass of white wine, but in many cases you have a little more structure and a little more body, which can make them really great with food. So we'll see what you think of this one, but I think it's a really neat example of a great dry style of rosé.
This is a beautiful color, this rosé.
Gorgeous,
now,
yeah.
Is it proper to always do the spinning thing with glasses?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, it's not just showing off.
Does it bring out the fragrance?
It absolutely does. I mean, if you think about some of these bottles of wine, the wine has been sort of oxygen starved for a long time because
yeah.
they've been sealed with the cork. And what you're doing when you're swirling your glass and the wine in the glass is adding oxygen to the wine so that it can really show all the aromas that it has to show.
Wow. I've never tasted a rosé like this. Interesting.
It's got great texture to it, nice acidity, nice fruit as well.
Interesting. Do you have a website?
We do. It's www.themodernnyc.com. There you can find all of our menus for both sides of the restaurant and our wine list, everything you need to know. So another website that I think is really great if you're not going to be in New York anytime soon to visit us here at The Modern and you want to kind of think about food and wine pairing, wineanswers.com is also a really great resource. A lot of the things that we talked about here today are covered there, fun articles, all kinds of great stuff if you're, you know, sitting in the office and taking a little break.
That's great.
It's a great website to check out, wineanswers.com.
Well, Belinda, I know I've taken up way more of your time than I said I would, but I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, I think if anybody's in New York, please come and visit us. We're right in Midtown on 53rd Street between 5th and 6th, and it was great to talk to you today.